I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames.
Rothschild with you this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's on vacation this week, and I'm happy to be able to sub for her as I did yesterday and the day before. And I'm joined, as always, by the great Brian Kelly. Fancy Brian, as he's known around here. He's not only the engineer, he's a producer, he helps with program directing. You know, he's out there with scotch tape and duct tape fixing the equipment. He does it all around here.
Sometimes literally. But this time was not a scotch tape job. It was just a little bit of a monitor and computer setup. We're making this studio even cooler than it already is.
I don't know. I should have spot you when you got up on that table. That was a little scary.
I am more nimble than it my physique might land you to believe.
I don't think I've done a good job of just spotting you anyway. I mean, I got the worst of that.
Physics does work on my side, being 300 pounds.
I won't quote you on that.
Yeah, 335.
You don't look a donut over 300.
No, it's not. It's more of a couple briskets over 300, man.
So we're back here. We were thrilled to have some news break while we were on yesterday afternoon when Donald Trump was making a whole mess of himself there at the National Association of Black Journalists, which is kind of fun to watch. They're not backpedaling. They never retract. They never backpedal. But it was a horrible day for him. And, you know, in political campaigns, I've talked to political campaign managers over the years, and they usually, you know, tally day by day. Did we win today or did we lose today? It was definitely a loss for Trump yesterday. And actually, in the 10 days since Kamala Harris has essentially become the nominee of the Democratic Party, it's been 10 good days in a row. And there's nothing but good days ahead in the short term anyway. She's going to announce her VP candidate on Monday. And then they're going to get a lot of buzz and a lot of publicity for that week. And then the DNC is going to start shortly thereafter. And that's going to give the Democrats a bounce, too. So it's like Trump's facing 30 bad days in a row. I mean, talk about losing momentum.
It's a shame. You know, it's just
couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Poor guy. And don't forget that not only will she pick the VP, but then they're going to be here in Western Wisconsin.
They're here on Wednesday, I think, right? Eau Claire.
We're playing Western Wisconsin roulette here.
It's been revealed.
It's Eau Claire?
Our caller was correct.
Yeah, we told you. All right. I mean, I didn't call it, but told you.
Yeah, we had a caller from Western Wisconsin, from Eau Claire, who was saying, come to Eau Claire. We've got a brand new auditorium, I guess, something up there.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
I love UW Eau Claire. But yeah, she guessed right. So Kamala Harris coming to Eau Claire, I think, on Wednesday. I wanted to give our listeners, Brian, a chance to hear Kamala Harris's response to the outrageous comments that Donald Trump made. I thought she handled it really well. Let's see what people think.
She didn't yell or scream at him and say, yell it and deny everything? Huh. Let's see.
No. And I want the listener, if you're listening in your car and you're not in the middle of driving 80 miles an hour on 90 or 94 on the Beltline. And don't do that on the Beltline, by the way. Call us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC, because this is the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842. And you can always call us and tell us what you think about this controversy that Donald Trump made up all by himself. Here's Kamala Harris.
This afternoon,
they knew what was coming.
Donald Trump spoke at the annual meeting of the National Association of Black Journalists. And it was the same old show.
I don't know how she could get show off.
And the disrespect. And let me just say, the American people deserve better. Mm-hmm. The American people deserve better. The American people deserve a leader who tells the truth, a leader who does not respond with hostility and anger when confronted with the facts. We deserve a leader who understands that our differences do not divide us. They are an essential source of our strength.
I love the temperate tone there. I mean, it was in such contrast to Trump's behavior and tone and attitude, and stressing how much disrespect he has, how much divisiveness he sowed, not only with those comments, but all his comments over the last 8.5 years since he came down that escalator. I just got to believe that a majority of the American people just want to turn the page on that. Enough already. Even if you voted for him in 2016, even if you voted for him in 2020, do you really want more of this nonsense and chaos and disrespect and name calling and narcissism, or do you want to just move on?
You ever played Cards Against Humanity?
It was.
Are you familiar with the game?
Yes, at Thanksgiving it wasn't very appropriate with the difference of ages.
By the way, I've played the family version of this. It is worse. It is absolutely worse because the innuendo is worse. But for those of you who know Cards Against Humanity, it's really funny for the first like round or two, maybe three, and then it's just like, oh, my dad's stupid effing face. Ha, ha, ha. And it just isn't as fun anymore, even if it is kind of, ha, ha.
Yeah, and for people who wanted, you know, to shake things up in 2016, I get that. For people who are sick of politics as usual and politicians as usual, and they thought Joe Biden was just a cutout of a politician, and they didn't like Hillary Clinton for whatever reason, I get all that. We tried this already, though. We did this. We saw this. We lived through this Trump soap opera. And do you really want to see another episode? I sure don't.
No. But in case you were worried that he might have learned anything or moved back on his rhetoric and everything, he did have a rally later on that day, and he thought fit to make a joke, and it wasn't about the black journalists, I just want to say, but he totally learned his lesson about tone and appropriateness, because this is the joke that he made at that time.
Corey's wife said, "I'd rather have my husband." Isn't that good? I know a lot of wives that would not say that. I'm sorry. They would not say that. But no, it's a great family. He was a great man. He was a brave man. He saw what was happening, and he jumped on top.
Joking about
the guy who jumped on his family and got shot for it.
He's just got no class whatsoever. We got Jack from Merrimack on the line, and you too can join the conversation at 855-752-4842. But I want to hear from you, Jack. What's on your mind?
Well, you mentioned earlier some people are getting, you know, tired of this constant political stuff. And, you know, we in Wisconsin, we've got, you know, election after election after election. I just want to say something, and that is a quote, I think it was from Plato, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it says something like, the price that good men pay for ignoring public affairs is to be ruled by bad men. We've got to make sure that we get out and vote and get rid of these bad men, period. End of my rant for the day.
I just found the quote, thanks to Google. Plato, the price good men pay for indifference to public affairs is to be ruled by evil men. And Trump is evil, and I don't use that term very often, but Or let's just put it another way. He is the ugliest of ugly Americans of all time. Thanks for the call, Jack, from Merrimack, one of our loyal listeners here on the Maggie Dawn Show and the Civic Media Radio Network. If you want to weigh in on Trump and his pathetic performance at the National Association of Black Journalists yesterday, give us a call, 855-752-4842. I thought that Pete Buttigieg had a good reaction to Trump yesterday. He kind of was echoing what you and I were talking about yesterday, Brian, that Trump can't help himself. He wants to be, you know, the center of attention again. So he said something crazy to get to be the center of attention again.
Yeah, he just needs to be. Please, everybody, look at me. And I'll scream and cry and whine until everybody looks at me. And for whatever reason, people are like, that's great. I like that in a person.
But, you know, his supporters are there, the Trump supporters. Charlie Kirk, hideous right-wing Charlie Cook, saying Trump showed us a masterclass yesterday. That I think the memo went out that you got to say masterclass, because shortly thereafter, Carolyn Leavitt, Trump's campaign press secretary, said, again, used the masterclass term. He put on a masterclass yesterday.
Wow, a masterclass.
She did say something that was actually true, though, the press secretary. She said he was still his authentic self. Yes, that was the authentic Donald Trump we
saw.
That's
the guy.
You know, where was the guy who had this transformation after the assassination attempt? Where was, we're going to lower the political rhetoric. We're going to be kinder and gentler. Didn't happen.
I don't think he's capable of it, because that would mean putting the focus on anyone else but himself.
It was never a good bet that it was going to happen. I mean, this guy is not going to change his spots. And the campaign now, I almost feel bad for the campaign managers who are professional people.
Nope.
I don't feel bad for them.
You said, hey, yes, that's great for me.
They sold their soul, no doubt about that, Brian. So one of the advisors says, we're not going to shy away from his comments. Of course, they had to say that.
You can't, because there's no way you're going to get him to back up. You're on the train, and it's going, and it ain't stopping.
I mean, the only thing that they could do is resign, which would have been the only decent thing to do. But if they had any decency, they never would have taken the job in the first place. Hey, I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn on The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm joined by the great Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Suburban women, will you please like me?
Hey, Matt Rothschild here. Thanks for listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie's on vacation, so I'm sitting in for her and having fun here with Brian Kelly in the booth. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin. Program note, at about 2:34, I'm going to have former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske on to talk about the U.S. Supreme Court reforms that President Biden unveiled earlier this week. I wanted to get her take on it. And then at about 3:06, we're going to have Matt Moreno, who's chair of the Waukesha County Democratic Party. See how things are going with the renewed enthusiasm that's out there for the possibility that the Democrats actually may get across the finish line and defeat Donald Trump, which I'm hoping and praying for. And I'm not a praying person, but I'm doing everything I can to hope that that comes to pass.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as praying goes, I'm praying to my Lord and Savior, which is Dionysus. And I thank you for bringing that up. I'd like to take this moment to say that when I do worship my Lord and Savior Dionysus, I'm going to need a day off afterwards. Religious holiday, of course.
Recovery time.
Recovery from my spiritual experience.
You know, I mentioned Pete Buttigieg had this response to what Trump was saying over there at the National Association of Black Journalists. Here's Buttigieg. I think precisely because it's going so well for Kamala Harris out of the gate, I expect that Trump and his Republican Party will get crazier. The more she pulls ahead, and she is pulling ahead now in some polls, the more you're going to see Trump revert to the only thing he knows how to do when he wants to get attention, which is get more and more outrageous. Pete knows this guy, too. It's not just Kamala who knows the type. Pete knows the type.
Yeah, and it's not like the people there are going to go, wow, I'm offended by this, because it's not like it's anything new. And it's, I honestly don't even think that. Here's the stupid part about the whole thing. I don't think he actually meant anything horrible by it. Like, I don't think he actually thought in his mind, I'm going to say something mean right now. He thought he was being funny and clever, and they were in on the joke.
Well, if that's true, I mean, he's even more off the base than you think. But part of it was he got flustered right away because someone challenged him. Someone challenged him who was a woman. Someone challenged him who was a person of color. And he doesn't like any of those three things to happen. And he just kind of totally lost it. And, you know, it's just amazing to see. There's been a funny meme on Twitter that Roy Wood Jr., the stand-up comedian, started with hashtag when I turned black. And then all these people are weighing in with funny comments about when I turned black, because Trump, of course, asked yesterday, when did Kamala Harris turn black? And so when I came into the studio today, I asked Brian, who is a stand-up comedian himself. Have you done stand-up?
I did. It's not my thing. Okay. I'm not good. I'm good at bouncing things off. I'm a really good number two. Like, I'm a good Chewbacca. I'm a good Samwise Gamgee. I'm not the Frodo. I'm not the Han Solo. But I learned that from trying to do stand-up.
So Brian's done some stand-up. He's a professional actor, by the way. So I come in here and I say, you know, who's this Roy Wood Jr. guy? And of course, Brian knew him.
Oh, yeah. Roy Wood Jr. is awesome. Daily Show guy and a huge Cubs fan, which makes me excited.
And so I went to Google and got a little clip from Roy Wood Jr., just about 15 seconds. We'll give you a sample.
But if we get rid of the Confederate flag, how am I gonna know who the dangerous white people are? I'm just saying, the flag had a couple upsides. So let's just be real about it.
I mean, it's not a surprise that the Confederate flag was being carried around on January 6th. Those people are still fighting the Civil War. There's a bunch of people in this country still fighting the Civil War.
Just so we're clear, that is the flag of an enemy combatant.
And they were traitors to this country. And of course, Trump wants to pardon them all. He says they were all
the ones that are innocent. And
even though
they were convicted, and he closed his eyes as if she didn't say anything and then moved on.
But they were convicted under a very tough system. Yeah, that's the very tough system that has, you know, caused mass incarceration for black and brown folks all over this country for the last 30, 40 years during the war on drugs.
Yeah, and all because Nixon wanted to be elected. What a wonderful time. Oh, and then they sold drugs to the inner city, and then they said, war on drugs now. I learned it by watching you is really what it comes down to. I learned it by watching you guys.
So, I mean, that's Trump's dealing with that. And he keeps repeating he's going to pardon everyone. I'm sure he will. I'm sure he'll pardon everyone who was convicted. He'll drop, of course, the investigations into himself, and he'd pardon himself if he has to. And this guy has never had any accountability in his 77 years. He's always been the super rich, spoiled little brat who could bully his way out, bribe his way out, have daddy's money get him out of any trouble that there ever was. And so the idea that some black woman journalist is going to ask not even a hostile question, just a question that any professional journalist would ask, just got so far under his skin that he had to just explode with all his ugliness. Or as his spokesperson said, he was still his authentic self. I just love that line.
It's exactly it. If you want to put a button on that and just circle it and go, this is exactly what white fragility is, that's the thing. And by the way, let's use this moment. Maggie Dawn did an interview with Robin DiAngelo, the author of White Fragility, and we'll be airing that on Monday. You should definitely listen to that. I'll be taking calls the last half hour afterwards. It's amazing. And by the way, what Donald Trump did and the exact way he reacted was textbook white fragility there. Because rather than responding to the things in real time and listening to the person, you thought it was all about you and made it as if someone was attacking you. It's amazing.
And for Trump, it's always about him. That's his narcissism, too. It's not just his racism. It's not just his jerkism. It's, you know, his narcissism. I mean, he can't help himself. And that's why I think Buttigieg is absolutely correct. The more he starts to slip in this race, the uglier and uglier it's going to get. His surrogates are going to get ugly. I mean, we had J.D. Vance, of all people, calling Kamala Harris a chameleon yesterday when J.D. Vance has changed his name like six times, changed his story like six times.
By the way, it's worth pointing out that J.D. Vance grew up Catholic. And what's that? That whole organization is run by what kind of people are they? Celibate, and they don't have a lot of kids. That's
funny how that is. Yeah, J.D. Vance has changed his position on Trump. First, he called him America's Hitler, and now he's his vice presidential candidate.
No one's more zealous than a convert, huh?
Chameleon, man. J.D. Vance lives in the original glass house. I wouldn't be throwing stones, J.D. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for Maggie, who's on vacation today. I'm speaking with Brian Kelly. We're taking your calls, too. I wanted to thank Jack for his call in the previous few minutes. And we'll be right back with former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske.
Watching you.
Hey, good afternoon. It's Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show. All across the Civic Media Radio Network here in the great state of Wisconsin on a gray and muggy day. Hope this mugginess breaks soon. And I invite you to join our conversation by dialing or texting 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We did get a text from Wes in Middleton who said, this is going to become a negative feedback loop of Trump slipping in the polls, becoming more and more unhinged, slipping further and further in the polls. I look forward to the show, he says. I just hope nobody gets hurt. They're a rabid, violent bunch, these MAGAs, and they don't lose with grace. No, I don't expect, and thanks for the text, Wes, I really appreciate it. I don't expect Trump to leave with any grace whatsoever. He showed us last time around that he'll refuse to leave with any grace. And he will try to swindle his way into office. And I worry that he's going to create some violence in this country, the likes of which we haven't seen for a long, long time. And so that's the concern. But I appreciate you weighing in on it, Wes. Now I am delighted to have as a guest the former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice Jeanine Gieske, who was appointed to the court by Tommy Thompson in 1993. Justice Gieske then won in 1994 and served until 1998 when she decided it wasn't for her and she wanted to do something else. She was a longtime professor of law at Marquette and longtime director of the Andrew Center for Restorative Justice in Marquette, which she's retired from, but she's still hanging around Marquette. You'll see her there sometimes. So, Justice Gieske, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Matt. Thanks for asking me.
You know, I've wanted to talk to you for a long time, in part just out of curiosity, to ask you whether you ever regretted leaving the court and wished you'd stayed on longer for some of these battles that have been going on with such heat over the last, 25 years?
Do you want the real answer? No.
Sure. Yeah, I do want the real answer.
No. 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 Personally, it was the right decision. And I've been able to do so many wonderful, exciting things working in prisons and working with victims of crime that I made the right decision for me. But I certainly stay closely connected in watching what's happening at the court and stay in touch with some of my former colleagues.
It's been something to watch, both the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court. So I wanted to start with the U.S. Supreme Court, since it's been in the news thanks to President Biden's decision to make some reform proposals, which he'd been hinting at, even in his talk where he said he wasn't going to run for re-election. He hinted he was going to have some U.S. Supreme Court reforms to unveil, and Lord knows he unveiled them earlier this week. I want to hear the first one that he talked about, Brian.
As soon as I came to office, I convened a bipartisan presidential commission on the Supreme Court of the United States, comprised of leading constitutional scholars, both liberal and conservative, to provide recommendations on potential reforms to the court. I've been careful in these deliberations because these are serious, serious decisions. In the face of increasing threats to American democratic institutions, I use the commission's analysis. And today I'm calling for three bold reforms to restore trust and accountability to the court and our democracy.
And so the three reforms were a proposal to amend the U.S. Constitution with a amendment that he called the No One Is Above the Law amendment that would overturn the immunity decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. The second one was for term limits, 18 years, letting the president appoint one justice every 2 years. And then the third would be the enactment of a code of conduct. Justice Geske, I wanted to ask you about the first one. But the predicate for the first reform is the outrageous decision by Chief Justice John Roberts in the immunity case. And I was naive. I thought he was a more moderate guy, I guess, or certainly a more cagey Chief Justice who wouldn't want to go down in the history books as the guy who said we're no longer a country of laws. We're a country of one supreme man when that person's in the Oval Office. So that was just such a shocking decision to me. What was your reaction to it?
Oh, utterly, utterly surprised and shocked. You know, most legal scholars were pretty sure they were not going to give immunity. You know, the Federal Court of Appeals had decided it unanimously, saying there's no immunity. And most people thought, well, maybe they won't even take it because it's such an obvious decision. And then they took it and came out with their primarily 6-3 decision. There are some provisions, and I'm happy to talk about them, that are really shot on top of just giving immunity for official acts, which, you know, you can argue about. But they also padded that decision with other aspects of law that's absolutely going to protect the president from any kind of criminal prosecution, even things that are related to the presidency. So it's a very distressing decision. Mm-hmm.
Well, do you want to get into some of those details? Sure. What were things that offended you?
Sure. Well, what the big holding is that a president's official acts are immune from any kind of prosecution. But then they went into detail to say, well, what are official acts? And they, without directly saying it, they're saying things like, well, talking to the vice president is official act. You know, well, the allegation about talking to the vice president was to threaten him that if he didn't reverse the election, you know, he was going to do something. And then the fact that he was checking on Georgia's votes, you know, could be part of his official act. And so therefore probably is immune. So they extended it beyond things that he just does in the Oval Office, in the ordinary course of things, but acts that most people would find highly objectionable. And then they said, you're not going to be able to introduce any of those official acts against him or her in a trial against him or her. So, for example, if they decided that maybe they should try the case on the Georgia call, what the court basically said was you can't introduce all the other things he did in the White House concerning that decision. And so, it's going to be hard to prove all these statements about the election was rigged and it was stolen and all these things the government couldn't use against them. So you have to do this in isolation, this phone call. And then they said, you can't look at motive. What was the motive for the call? Well, the motive for the call to Georgia was to upset that election. but you can't introduce. I mean, it's really unusual for the U.S. Supreme Court to get down into the weeds and talk about evidence and burden and, you know, how you look at these things. And I mean, they did remand it to the appellate, the trial judge, to sort of determine what's official or not. But the language is so strong that it really does protect the president almost for anything he or she does in office.
Yeah, Justice Geske, it made me wonder why we even need to have an office of White House counsel now, because everything the president does is de facto legal.
Yeah, I know. And you know, we can think, well, we've seen already some of the things that a president can do. And, you know, now there's no limit. I mean, whatever he or she wants to do, they're going to be protected if they can kind of call it official business. You know, I think another place that it'll come up if he ever goes to trial are the taking the classified documents. Was that a part of his presidential official duties to take those and therefore not criminal? And so, you know, it's going to be very distressing if that decision stands. And so I'm really thrilled that President Biden, that's one of the things he took on. But we're going to need a constitutional amendment to change that, I think. There can be litigation on whether a statutory change is enough, but I think probably an amendment. And it's going to take a while before we're going to have a Congress that's going to get that through.
Well, that's the problem. It takes so long. It's two-thirds majority, correct, in both chambers of the Congress, and then three-quarters of the states have got to ratify, and that's a long process. It's not impossible. We've done it 27 times, but it needs to get done. And otherwise, we have, a president with royal powers. I mean, this was the crassest political decision by the U.S. Supreme Court since Bush v. Gore, anyway. And
yeah,
it was amazing.
They went way out of their league. And, you know, there's no precedent for it. There are no cases that say there's immunity for a president. I mean, they just made it up out of whole cloth. The only little saving grace in terms of the future is that Amy Coney Barrett did disagree with part of that decision. It doesn't affect that because they still had five people, but she disagreed on the questions of whether you could introduce official acts to prove unofficial acts and whether you could introduce motive. And so she disagreed with that evidence part.
Do you know her? I've been kind of surprised in a happy way at some of her, not only her partial departure on this case, but some other decisions or votes that she's made.
I do not know her personally, but I have a friend who's very close to her and who has a lot of respect for her. It's interesting because when people get into those positions, particularly U.S. Supreme Court, where they have the lifetime appointment unless things change, you could see them sometimes moving either to the middle or off of the philosophical view they have it. And we're seeing that happen with her. I mean, she initially was deciding, voting with the other, you know, quote unquote conservatives, but she's slowly kind of moving to the middle a little bit. And even on the dissenting side once in a while. So it's going to be interesting to watch her. I think that she probably won't be as predictable as some of the others are in these cases.
And I have a hunch too, both as it relates to the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the functioning of the U.S. Supreme Court, that sometimes personalities play a part, that, you know, caustic, kind of rude or mean behavior by one justice or another to someone who isn't agreeing, or maybe in personal interactions too, that can push a justice in a different direction. Does that ever happen?
Well, I don't think anybody would ever admit that happened. It's hard sometimes, you know, when you've got somebody who's being way out of line in civility and attacking. But ultimately, you know, people have taken an oath to follow the law. It's much more likely that you wind up having those fights over philosophical differences. But I don't think people tend to do that. I do think that courts, unfortunately, have moved into partisan politics way beyond what our founders envisioned and way beyond what I think is appropriate as that third branch of government. They are supposed to be independent and be able to keep a check on the other two branches. And we've been in trouble in that at the U.S. Supreme Court and sometimes at our own state Supreme Court.
Yeah. What? So on the term limit issue, we can start that conversation. We're going to have to take a break in a second. But what's your feeling on term limits?
Well, I think it's not a bad idea. You know, the justices didn't used to stay as long as they do. And now this lifetime appointment, it was supposed to keep them independent from politics and be above it. Well, it's not working, right, for a variety of reasons. And, you know, 18 years, you get a lot of experience, a lot of wisdom. But, you know, the court changes every time somebody new comes in. And the interesting part of President Biden's proposal on that is that somebody comes up every 2 years. And so that the court would always change. And I can tell you, even from my own experience in Wisconsin, when somebody new comes in, everybody readjusts. You have to re-explain why you do things the way you do. You may look at it differently. And so I think it's a real healthy thing to do. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not likely, but I think it's a good suggestion.
I'd like to see it happen, too. We'll be back with more with Justice Jeanine Gieske, former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, talking with us here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Nowadays, these partisan feelings are so strong that people have lost any sense of justice.
Matt Rothschild with you this afternoon. I'm subbing for Maggie here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network all across the great state of Wisconsin. I'm joined for the next few minutes still by Wisconsin Supreme Court former Justice Jeanine Gieske, who's been over at Marquette for the last 25 years as a law professor and as a director, now retired, of the Andrews Center for Restorative Justice. Thanks for hanging around, Justice Gieske.
Sure.
I wanted to bring up the code of conduct issue, which was the third reform that President Biden unveiled earlier this week. Context in the Wisconsin area is that you signed on to a letter from 54 retired judges in Wisconsin urging the Wisconsin Supreme Court several years ago to adopt a code of conduct. And the context for that was that there was a special prosecutor who was investigating Scott Walker, who had urged a couple of the justices to recuse themselves because they had a conflict of interest in this case, because they had gotten money from Wisconsin manufacturers, or their campaigns had benefited from money from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and Wisconsin Club for Growth, millions of dollars, actually. And both of those entities were under investigation by the special prosecutor. So the special prosecutor had asked them to recuse themselves. They refused to do that. In fact, they voted to drop the case, fire the special prosecutor, and interpret the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in such a way as to give Scott Walker a get-out-of-jail-free card. So that was the context for you signing on to that. As far as Biden's proposal, how important is it? How would that function? Is it enforceable?
First of all, let me give you some background. The federal courts, except for the U.S. Supreme Court, have their own professional code of conduct, judicial. That's highly enforced. It's very clear. It's like many state codes of conduct. And actually, Wisconsin's is good on some things. It's not good on campaign contributions, but it's good on other things. But judges all over this country, you know, sign on for those things and are disciplined when they violate it. The U.S. Supreme Court is the only court in this country that has no code of ethics. And so they can do what they want. And the Chief Justice Roberts has said, well, we have our sort of own informal role, you know, but it was unenforceable. Nobody'd look at it. And there's no question that looking at what some of the justices have engaged in, particularly Justice Thomas, with his huge gifts of trips and planes and being over, you know, across the world and yachts, And there are things, you know, Justice Scalia also engaged in a little bit of that. He didn't fly, I don't know, internationally, but he stayed at expensive places with big conservative donors. And there have been other incidents with other justices. They were supposed to put it down on documents and they didn't. So now they're amending them, but there's no enforceable code of conduct. And they have fought that. Mm-hmm. And every time Congress or president starts talking about it, they'll say separation of power. You can't control us. You can't control us. Well, it's time for the president and Congress to start trying to and find out what happens. Unfortunately, the arbiter of that is the U.S. Supreme Court. So, but I can't believe that there isn't a majority of justices or almost the majority of justices on that court, including the Chief Justice, that doesn't believe that they ought to be bound by basic ethics. And one of it is not receiving huge gifts from people who have litigation before the court or who appear regularly before the court.
I mean, it must have been an embarrassment for the Chief Justice to see all the benefit that Clarence Thomas was getting from Harlan Crowell, this far-right billionaire supporter. I mean, the Chief Justice is supposed to want to protect the prestige of the court.
Well, he'd been trying, you know, and this immunity case doesn't help him in that regard, but he'd been trying hard to try to show how independent the court is. You know, I remember during his confirmation hearings, he said, I'm just an umpire. I call him like I see him, you know, no influence. And that's really what's supposed to happen. But, you know, clearly there's a huge vested interest by a number of those justices, by particular litigants and particular companies that have interest before the court. And that's one of the reasons, if you look at the polls, the respect for that court has just tanked. I mean, that scares me, because if we can't trust the courts, our democracy is in terrible trouble.
And our democracy is in terrible trouble in a lot of ways right now.
I think the courts saved the election. You know, despite all the problems, you looked at all those attacks on the last election, and I don't know how many courts, it was tens and twenties of courts, and not one court upheld that there had been fraud that would result in change in the election. So at least the trial courts and the state courts hung in there, and I was very proud of them. And that's what you want. You want a court that's going to make some tough decisions when they need to.
And the court in Wisconsin just barely hung on by a 4-3 decision.
It was close.
Yeah. I mean, and conservative Justice Hagedorn, to his lifelong credit, was the decisive vote on that, joined the other three other liberal justices and said, this is an unprecedented ask that you're asking of the court, essentially to throw out hundreds of thousands of ballots that people cast, being told that that was a legal way to cast their ballots. The other conservative justices said they would have at least considered that idea.
I often cite Justice Hagedorn as, you know, as the kind of judge that you want in that position, because he calls him like he sees him. He is conservative, but if the merits aren't there, he doesn't go there. And, you know, I mean, I like to think I was people talk to me about me in the swing justice. You know, there were times that some of my dear friends were furious at me because of a vote, but that's what being a judge is about, is calling it even when it's tough.
I also like Hagedorn's temperament and his tenor, which is calm and civilized. And, it's really a model, I think, of judicial conduct that he's bringing. I wish we had more time. I'd love to talk to you about restorative justice and how important that is. And
I'll do that someday. So.
All right. And I also admire that you're on the Wisconsin Alliance for Civic Trust. So you'll have to come back. I've been speaking with former Justice Jeanine Geske of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm subbing in here for Maggie Dawn on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I'll be right back with the chair of the Waukesha County Dems. Thanks a lot, Justice.
Sure. Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You too. I'm not alone.
see me.
We have to bring back law and order.